From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on this day in Maine, Monday, January 12th, 2026. The Democratic primary field to replace Congressman Jared Golden continues to grow. Earlier today, State Senator Joe Baldacci announced he was joining a race that's a top priority for both parties nationally this year. Kevin Miller has more.
Joe Baldacci is a lifelong resident of Bangor and an attorney who served for 12 years on the city council before being elected to the Maine Senate in 2020. Baldacci pledges to fight to defend Social Security, Medicare, and programs that benefit small businesses and working families if he's sent to Washington. He describes himself as a pragmatist who's been willing to work with others, regardless of their party affiliation.
True to form, this second district has been genuinely independent-minded. Whether you're a Democrat or Republican, people are going to look at what you can do for them, what you can do for their communities. I've had many Republicans and unenrolled people tell me they're going to support me because they know me or they know the results I've delivered as a state senator or as a city councilor.
Baldacci is running for a seat that his brother, Democrat John Baldacci, held for 8 years in the late 90s and early 2000s before being elected governor. He joins four other Democrats in the June 9th primary. The winner is expected to face off against former Republican Governor Paul LePage in the fall. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
Maine lawmakers are considering a bill that would repurpose the Long Creek Youth Development Center in South Portland. As Carol Bousquet reports, several former residents of the facility testified about the need to offer young offenders more community-based services as a path toward rehabilitation.
Francis Batchelder testified that between the ages of 14 and 16, he was in and out of Long Creek five separate times. He says he was not incapable of change, but Long Creek was not designed to help him.
I'm standing here today, employed, sober, involved in my community, and working with youth organizations because someone finally invested in my rehabilitation. I am living proof that when we focus on treatment instead of punishment, lives change.
Because he had no treatment plan and didn't get the help he needed, Batchelder said each time he was released from Long Creek, he ended up returning. The Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee is now considering whether to convene a working group to study diversion and early intervention programs that could keep troubled youth in residential housing instead of being locked up at Long Creek. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Carol Bousquet.
State Representative Kathy Javner has passed away after a battle with breast cancer, according to the House Republican office. Javner, who represented Chester and parts of Penobscot County, served four terms in the Maine House. Most recently, she was on the legislature's Health and Human Services Committee. Javner was open about her cancer diagnosis and spoke passionately about it during a debate over changes to Maine's so-called Death with Dignity law last spring. According to her legislative profile, Javner spent her career as a teacher, development worker, and homemaker. She is survived by her husband and three children. Some pharmacies that serve long-term care facilities and group homes say that new, lower Medicare prices for certain drugs that went into effect this year could force them to cut services. The president of Brunswick-based Guardian Pharmacy of Maine, Courtney Orland, says they relied on some of those drugs to make their margins, but now they're facing steep reductions in reimbursement. As a result, she says they may have to curtail services to the facilities they serve throughout the state.
Meaning we deliver 2 days a week rather than 5 days a week or 7 days a week, or even in some cases if we can continue to service a rural community because it just becomes, you know, not a financial hit we can take.
Orland says she hopes Congress will take action by adding a temporary fee on prescriptions dispensed by long-term care pharmacies for the discounted Medicare drugs. According to new federal data, private sector employers in Maine added more than 6,000 jobs in the first quarter of 2025. As Ari Snyder reports, that's in line with seasonal trends.
The latest numbers published by the Bureau of Labor Statistics measure employment change across various industries. Through the first 3 months of 2025, the retail trade industry added over 1,800 jobs. That was the greatest net change across the nine sectors tracked by the Bureau. the construction industry added more than 1,000 jobs, but Maine's manufacturing, business services, and hospitality sectors all posted net job losses for that period. Historical data from the Bureau indicates Maine tends to see a modest increase in the number of jobs during the first quarter of the year. More recently, hiring slowed across the country in December, even as the unemployment rate dipped slightly to 4.4%. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
Vertical Harvest, a new indoor farm in downtown Westbrook, is facing a lawsuit after allegedly failing to make payments to a broker that helped secure funding for its development. Michael Livingston reports.
In 2022, Vertical Harvest hired a Canadian broker called Waterside Commercial Finance to help secure over $48 million in loans from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. In a lawsuit served last week, Waterside alleges Vertical Harvest and investors Raven Fund Management misled the broker to defer a nearly $1 million brokerage fee, despite having funds available. It accuses the defendant of breach of contract and misrepresentation. Vertical Harvest CEO Nona Yahia says the claims are inaccurate and that the dispute is over financing, not the operations of the farm.
We are committed to the community. We are committed to the jobs that we will create, and we are committed to serving the community for years to come with fresh, nutritious, healthy product.
Last year, the city of Westbrook filed a tax lien against the company for over $45,000 in unpaid taxes. Yahia said the company is working with the city to settle its payments. The four-story building is currently growing produce and is expected to yield over 3 million pounds of mixed greens per year. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Michael Livingston.
A new state law would require outdoor lighting across Maine to be dimmed at night in an effort to protect the state's wildlife and dark skies. Francesca Gundrum of Maine Audubon says it requires public agencies to reduce light pollution when they install or are replacing lights.
So think warmer lights versus cooler lights, shielded lights, lights on timers. So those are things that, you know, save money, save energy, of course, and then from our perspective, help to save wildlife.
The law exempts lighting for sports, transportation, and emergencies. Gundrum says too much artificial light can disorient animals and affect their behavior and health. And she says cutting unnecessary outdoor light will help preserve Maine's dark, star-filled skies for visitors and residents alike. Maine is one of 16 states that has abolished or severely limited parole. It's the only state in the Northeast to do so. Different from probation, which is part of someone's sentence, parole is the conditional, supervised release of a prisoner into the community before a sentence is completed. 4 years ago, a state commission recommended that it be restored in Maine. And as Susan Sharon reports, lawmakers are considering whether to put parole back on the books.
Maine has developed a national reputation for its model of corrections, which allows prisoners to vote, allows laptops and remote work in prison, and has a less restrictive housing unit for those who demonstrate exemplary behavior. It's grounded in a philosophy that emphasizes respect for individuals and rehabilitation.
Maine has done a good job of investing in programming and supportive services for people who are incarcerated, but to what end?
Representative Nina Milliken, a Democrat from Blue Hill, is the sponsor of the latest bill to restore parole. Maine was the first state to abolish it in 1976 as part of a national effort to keep violent offenders behind bars. Since then, there have been multiple attempts to bring back parole.
I just want us to understand that if we're calling it the Department of Corrections, what's the point of correcting if we then don't give people, these men and women, an opportunity to reintegrate with their families and their communities and build their lives outside of prison? What are we investing in?
Since parole was abolished, Milliken says sentences have gotten 20% longer. The state's prison population has tripled to about 2,000. And according to the Maine Department of Corrections, about 15% of incarcerated people are now over the age of 50. They're not only older, but they have more complex health issues.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Susan from Maine Public Radio.
I'm Shay, one of the CNAs up here.
At the Mountain View Correctional Center in Charleston, nearly 50 older men with diagnoses including dementia, seizure disorders, COPD, and cancer reside in the specialized healthcare unit, staffed by certified nursing assistants and other care providers.
I was diagnosed with Parkinson's in 2011, and I was diagnosed with diabetes in 2003.
Until last year, 59-year-old Charlie Martin was a resident of the unit, which looks more like a nursing home than a correctional facility.
My hands have gotten really weak. It's hard for me to cut up my own food.
Like others here, Martin has limited mobility. He relies on a wheelchair because he says he can't walk far. He served 37 years in prison for a murder conviction, and at the time of this interview was just 49 days from being released.
They're trying to find an assisted living home for me, and then it's just going to be played by ear.
Parole advocates say it's costly and cruel to incarcerate someone at a rate of about $117,000 a year when they are incapable of posing a public safety risk.
Some families would be okay for the opportunity for parole. However, for the families and loved ones who are not okay with parole, forcing them to be a part of the parole process now is re-victimizing them.
Representative Suzanne Salisbury is a Democrat from Westbrook who told members of the Judiciary Committee she opposes the parole bill, in part because no crimes would be excluded from consideration. Someone sentenced to life could be considered after serving 20 years. Others would need to serve at least half of their sentence.
I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around someone that was sentenced to life in prison being given that opportunity to change that completely.
The final decision would be up to a 7-member parole board, which would weigh multiple factors, including risk to public safety. But Deputy Corrections Commissioner Anthony Cantillo says it's unnecessary, given the state's supervised community confinement program for those who demonstrate good behavior and who have less than 3 years remaining on their sentence.
In the past year, 2025, the department released 107 residents to the community under SCCP. The program has a high success rate. The women's successful completion rate for SCCP in 2025 was 91%, and for men, it was 82%.
The DOC would like to expand the supervised community confinement program, but Cantillo says the high cost of housing is a major barrier, which would also be true for those on parole. Of all the states that allow parole, only 10, including Massachusetts, approve half or more applicants for release. According to the Prison Policy Initiative, the approval rate varies from a low of 4% in South Carolina to a high of 76% in Wyoming.
It's not like we're saying, oh, we need to just open the gates of the prison and let everybody out.
Representative Nina Milliken, the main parole bill's sponsor, says there are some tough restrictions to qualify. It doesn't guarantee release, she told the committee. It just guarantees review. A work session on the bill has not yet been scheduled. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, an update on the Maine Turnpike. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening.